سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Even in the face of unprecedented devastation, the Palestinian resistance continues to stand firm.
undaunted and unbroken. In recent days, as Israeli airstrikes have killed dozens of civilians in Gaza, including children and aid seekers sheltering in schools, resistance groups have also launched coordinated attacks on Israeli military positions in Khan Yunis and southern Gaza. These operations carried out by factions like the Quds Brigades are not just military responses. They are declarations of survival, defiance and the refusal to surrender. Despite the overwhelming firepower and international backing for the occupation, the Palestinian people continue to resist through armed struggle, through mourning, and through the unyielding belief that justice is not a fantasy, but a right worth fighting for. Welcome to Spotlight. I am Bahman Nouri. Let us begin with a short report.
The Palestinian resistance persists in its retaliatory operations against the Israeli occupation forces across the Gaza Strip. The Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, announced its fighters targeted a Zionist infantry force with missiles. Ensuing clashes resulted in IOF casualties in the Shuja'iyah neighborhood east of the Gaza City. The Al-Qassam Brigades has released a video of attacks on Israeli soldiers and vehicles near Gaza City. The footage shows Israeli soldiers being sniped at in Tal el-Montar and clashes in Shuja'iyah, with a tank and command post being targeted. Abu Obaida, the brigade spokesman, commented on the recent operation in Beit Hanun, which killed at least five Israeli soldiers. He characterized the operation as a significant setback for the occupation army, which believed the area was secure. He stressed that the resistance in Gaza will persist in inflicting losses on the Israeli regime. Abu Obaida asserted that the Palestinian people and their resistance fighters will determine the future, warning the IOF against remaining in Gaza. The Qassam operation in Beit Hanun was not merely a tactical maneuver. It conveyed a dual strategic message with both military and intelligence implications. The operation coincided with Netanyahu's visit to Washington, representing multifaceted embarrassment at various levels. Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says the operation showed the strength of the Palestinian resistance and caused fear in the enemy. The Yemeni movement noted that the operation occurred amid escalated enemy attacks and a crippling blockade in Gaza. Israeli newspaper Yedioth Ahronot has reported that the death toll among the IOF soldiers in Gaza has risen, with 31 killed since the occupation army restarted its genocide on March 18th. Israeli Channel 13 says Operation Gidon has failed to meet its goals. Questioning the outcomes aside from significant military casualties and destruction in Gaza.
Welcome back. Allow me to introduce my guests. Saeb Shah, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast. And Mazen Qumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author, joining us from Bethlehem.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, very good to have you on this program once again. I'm going to start my talk with Saeb. How are the Palestinian resistance factions such as Hamas's Al-Qassam brigades still able to carry out precision strikes against the Israeli forces despite Gaza's siege and infrastructure collapse?
Hello to you and your guest and the audience. That, in short, I summarize it in the will of the resistance to fight. They are standing in their land and they understand very well the political designs being thrown about by Trump and Netanyahu. Even they were bragging about it yesterday, the transfer of the Palestinian, the cleansing of Palestine, the annexation of the West Bank, and that's for from 1917 till today, the Palestinian resistance is being developing its skill and endurance to fight colonial powers, from the British colonists and then the Zionist movement, and the Americans embedded with the Zionist movement in the ground. You can see that in the Gaza Strip with the Delta Force. And you can see the roaming of the skies over Gaza by the Royal Air Force, British Royal Air Forces, giving coordinates to the Zionist entity. And, you know, they are the Americans and the Zionist entity, once they have the British coordinates, they can use it as they like. The British say they are trying to help in finding out the hostages, as they say. But in real terms, this is used and fed to artificial intelligence to target the Palestinians. The Palestinians know that, and the Palestinians kept manufacturing their own weapons and recycling unexploded explosions and rockets from the Zionist entity who had landed in Gaza. And if the numbers are horrendous, you know, like really scary, when you see every individual in Gaza, there's nearly 30 kilograms of explosive landed or supposed to be landed on the in his head, the amount the Israelis thrown at Gaza. And in that term, the Palestinian resistance, if you see the operations, how it's been conducted from Jabalia to Shija'iya in Gaza to Khan Yunis, multi-operations in Khan Yunis for the last month, is amazed any military expertise, the precise way of planning, like they knew exactly where is the Israelis' army is moving and where is coming and what kind of equipment it have, and they prepare themselves very well. This is in its own is intelligence kind of victory to the Palestinian, and an intelligence defeat to all the military or civil intelligence services or governmental intelligence services, the Israelis or the Western ones altogether. And that can show the way it's been handled. This Nahas Yehuda, one of the most fanatic units and the brigades in the Israeli army, who's tortured the people in the West Bank and as well in Syria and in the Gaza Strip. They are notorious for their fascism and the way they commit crimes, and how the Palestinian resistance managed to kill five of them, injured 14. One of them is a high-ranking officer. This is can show this Zionist entity, as Netanyahu before he left to Washington, and this would be my last point here, told his chief of the army to tell him, Zamir, you have to cleanse the north of Gaza and send them to the south. And that's before this Beit Hanun operation, which devastated their all army. This man was brought to lead the army after the sacking of Halevi and promised Netanyahu massive victory in Gaza, now return and confirms what the previous military chief Halevi used to say to Netanyahu: you cannot win Gaza, you cannot destroy the resistance, you cannot retrieve the captives and the unless you sit and negotiate with them. If you want to occupy the Gaza Strip, you have to throw a huge number of soldiers in there, and you have to expect huge casualties and to pay the price. The same thing now Zamir is telling Netanyahu.
Let me to jump in the conversation because I need to also bring in Mazin into this. Mazin Sayeb rightly mentioned the Operation Beit Hanun, which was a very successful one despite nearly 2 years of unrelenting pressure, unrelenting attacks, inhumane attacks of the Israeli regime against the Palestinian forces. But the resistance is still able to manage coordinated joint attacks, such as the Quds Brigade strike on Israeli command centers, for example. I want to know, what does this joint attack, what they reveal about the logistical networks and external support that Hamas may be receiving?
Well, it clearly shows that people's will is very, very important component. I mean, nobody questions the Israeli military superiority. Israel has the most advanced weapons, and even the U.S. just approved another $560 million worth of military supplies to Israel. This would mean with the $17.5 billion before in the past 20 months that Israel got $18 billion of U.S. Direct aid, military aid, to commit this genocide over the past 20 months. So that's an average of about $1 billion a month in military support from the U.S. to commit this genocide. Clearly, Israel is not winning its battle against the resistance. I agree with your previous speaker, because you really cannot win against local resistance. That's not in the cards. Historically, it never happened. So so Israel directs its efforts at the civilians, and that's what's happening. And so, that's the genocide continuing. And so I believe it's important. The location is also important to note. Beit Hanun, where this incident happened, is actually in the northeast of Gaza, very close to the so-called border of 1948 ceasefire line. So that had happened right there when Israel considers this area to have been cleansed of people and to have been secure for its Israeli soldiers. Showed again that there is no such thing, that there is an illusion of control, and that you cannot control even that you have demolished most of Gaza.
Right, Mazen. Well, Saib, I want to talk also about Abraham Accords specifically now. Well, do you think these accords represent a betrayal of the Palestinian cause, or a pragmatic shift in Arab diplomacy?
In that, I want to bring 3 points, but yes, it is. This is the way Netanyahu acts and fill the news outlets, Western news outlets, with lots of lies. Look at our intelligence operations with the like pagers. We took the leadership in Lebanon, along with that, thousands of civilians, nurses, doctors in Lebanon. And look at our operation in Syria. We took Syria without one bullet fired, using our intelligence services. Look how we assassinate Palestinian leaderships all around the area. We win the battle with the brain, with intelligence only, and we send infiltrators to Iran to assassinate scientists or civilians or leaders in the industry or commanders from neighboring countries who are cooperating with us. And they hinting at Azerbaijan, at Erbil in Kurdistan of the north of Iraq. All of this is part of the design. But what's an operation like Beit Hanun's operation, or Khan Yunis, or Jabalia? Destroy all of these lies. Can it prove you're bragging about intelligence services and how smart and sophisticated the Western agencies who helped Netanyahu from the year of 2005 till today in Lebanon through the assassination of Hariri and preparing the grounds for this massive destruction on the leadership of Lebanon and all of that. So many intelligence services from the West, or even reactionary Arabs or local in there. And the same thing happened with sending infiltrators from borders, massive borders of Iran with Azerbaijan and Erbil or North Kurdistan, Iraq, and that sort of thing. But let's see in the meeting between Netanyahu and Trump what happened. There is a 3 points which is got my attention. The first one, a criminal wanted by the International Criminal Court hand a letter of recommendation to the Nobel Peace Prize for Trump. And he handed him that like he owns this. This criminal owns the award for the Nobel Peace Prize, which is might. The second one, when Trump said Netanyahu was asking him to lift the sanctions of Syria now and to give Syria a chance, which shows clearly Gulani was his own puppet, which is all knows that. But today it's more clear when he Trump said that. And the same thing when Trump told him, our country is hot like your country about Palestine, but your country seemed very hot a few weeks, which means you are being scolded by the Iranian missiles. So the ones who's rushing today for the Abraham Accords and to the lies, which was Trump wanted to market to them, they have to pay attention today.
Right. I also want to bring in Mazen into this. Regarding the Abraham Accords, I want, you're a scientist yourself, a political scientist, Mazen, tell me, in as a contrastive analysis of these policies taken by some Arab countries and the Yemeni strategies in supporting the Palestinian cause proactively by attacking with whatever they have in support of Palestine, how do you put those in two parts of the equation?
Well, we must tip our hats to the Yemenis who have stood up and said, let's obey international law and let's stop this genocide. How are we going to stop this genocide? What tool does a country like Yemen has? What tool does a country like Egypt has, or Iran or Lebanon? In the case of Yemen, it was very clear there are ships that are supplying the Zionist regime with weapons, with food, with other items that need to keep its war economy going. And these ships cannot be allowed to pass. According to international law, that's an obligation on countries to stop an ongoing genocide and ecocide, by the way, destruction of the environment. So they acted, and for that, people of the world have been very grateful. I've seen Yemeni flags and demonstrations from Washington, D.C. to London to Paris. So people appreciate people who stand up for ending a genocide. The same thing with the Lebanese resistance and what they were able to act with limited resources they have. Now, the question really about the oppressors, in this case, imperialism and Zionism, they stretched themselves too far. So they want to take on, as Netanyahu have said, the whole Middle East, make a new Middle East, according to his words, which he had planned long before October 2023. In fact, a few weeks before October 2023, Netanyahu was bragging at the United Nations of how he's going to have a link between Asia and Europe through these collaborative Arab regimes and through what he calls the Great State of Israel or Greater Israel. This is his plan. This is the plan of Zionist leadership for decades, not a recent plan. And they stretch themselves too far and wide. And the evidence of that came, of course, on their attack on Iran. For 12 days, they pummeled Iran, killing over 1,000 Iranians, including scientists and leaders. But Iran is not somebody to push around, you know. So Iran retaliated, and it was devastating for the state of Israel. And for its supporters, they had to come rushing to save it. That's why the U.S. was told by the Zionist lobby, go attack those three nuclear facilities. And Trump obligingly did so. and he failed at that too. So both the U.S. and Israel have really failed in this grand project to reshape the Middle East to be what they would like.
Right, so I want to also, we have only 4 minutes, so 2 minutes each of you, please. I want to focus on the ceasefire talks that are ongoing and underway in Doha right now. Do you really think that Donald Trump's push for a 60-day truce or ceasefire is a genuine peace effort or just a maneuver for probably a Nobel Peace Prize?
I think yourself and the people of Iran will understand better than anybody how to trust Trump. You were negotiating, Iran was negotiating with Trump, and straight away led an attack on a country was having a nuclear negotiating with. Trump is the same man who in 2018 left the JCPOA which the United States of America, Obama, signed, and with a tweet even insulted the international community, who worked 5 years on that. Trump, the man who assassinated the top commander, Soleimani, in 2020. So this kind of guy, he's plays at a great deceptive operation against the regional governments or the resistance. So this man cannot be trusted whatsoever. Any American negotiator like Woodcock or anybody in Doha cannot be trusted. The Palestinian resistance, now its card is stronger after its military operation in there. And in that, we can see that in the amendments the Palestinians put to Woodcock proposals. The resistance saying, we want 1, 2, 3, 4, which is 60 days after that will be negotiation about ceasefire or ending the whole operation. But if the Zionist entity refuse that and want to go in the moving sand of Gaza, they are welcome. This is what the resistance saying. We are capable. We have our incubators who is facing genocide is still behind the resistance. And even the Zionist entity intelligence services the last couple of days were saying Hamas itself, it's built itself with forces up to the same level it was pre the 7th of October. So this is an Israeli kind of information about that. So they can themselves accept the fact that as Netanyahu Trump and Netanyahu floating the idea of the between themselves in front of the journalists,
Simon,
the Palestinian two-state solution.
I have to jump in for the sake of the conversation time. Just 30 seconds for you, Mazin. Do you think this temporary ceasefire could realistically lead to a permanent truce?
The answer is no. Israel has broken ceasefires that they have signed before. As mentioned, they cannot be trusted. The Israeli government wants to continue this war because it keeps them in power. And it keeps their public from turning against each other. But they are failing at all fronts, diplomatically and everything. And they hope the U.S. will save them via forcing the Palestinian resistance to surrender, which, of course, will never happen. So things will continue, I think, for a while until the international community wakes up. And there are signs that the international community is waking up, so I am optimistic.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for participating in our talk and in yet another spotlight here. Mr. Saeb Shaath, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast, and also Mr. Mazin Qumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author, joining us from Bethlehem. And to you, thank you so much for staying with us on another spotlight.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
Allah, Allah.
humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful And may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household Assalamu alaikum My dear audience, brothers and sisters Welcome back to the series of Talks for Humanity This is Hamza Azizi We've been reviewing the examples of financial support for other believers mentioned in the Holy Book, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioning giving loans to the others, charity, feeding, adds to this sheet, to this number of examples, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala adds placing the homeless. We quoted the story of Muhajireen and Ansar, the immigrants from Mecca to Medina with the Prophet, and the people who resided in Medina. We mentioned that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quotes that there were a number of believers in Medina who shared their houses with immigrants, despite the fact that they had difficulty, despite the poverty for their own. وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصَ In our narrations, we hear that some of these Ansar, their houses were too small even for one family. For example, just imagine a house having only one room. Despite this situation, they put a curtain in the middle of the room, in between. They divided the house into two parts, one part for the immigrant and the other part for his own family. This is very interesting and surprising. This is something that Prophet taught these people. Interestingly, they are the same people who used to kill each other before the emergence of Islam. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, by the teachings of the Holy Book and by the efforts of the Holy Prophet, he implanted such love, such affection within the hearts of believers that they have shown such scenes to the world, to the history. So, you see, these examples might, at the beginning, might sound very easy to some of our listeners. They might say, okay, what are these examples? The Sheikh is going, we are looking for very deep mystical issues. You see, the most mystical, the most spiritual scenes are these scenes that we are quoting from the Holy Book. Because this is harder. You see, it is not very hard for me to set my clock to wake up in the middle of night and pray for 2 hours. It is hard, but it is not as hard as giving money to someone else as charity or giving place to someone else despite the fact that I and my family need the place and I will be in difficulty. I believe that this latter is much more harder than the former, believe me. That's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala emphasizes on these social codes a lot. This is kind of a good act that we are seeking nowadays, even in the modern world. Let me give you an example after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad وآل محمد يا مسلمين صلوا عليه صل على محمد صلوا عليه يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه Welcome back, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We've been reviewing the examples of financial support. We have come to placing the homeless admired in the Holy Book. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter Mujadala, verse 11, says that even if you come to a gathering and you a person joins the gathering and there is not enough room for him to sit, make room. You see, very tiny, small issues. It sounds very unimportant, but it means to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The faith shows its strength in these small examples. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا قِيلَ لَكُمْ تَفَسَّحُوا فِي الْمَجَالِسِ فَفْسَحُوا يَفْسَحِ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ. When you are told make room in sittings, then do make rooms. Then Allah will make room for you in the hereafter. It's very interesting, very enjoyable. And this is the reality of spirituality of Islam. Just consider this culture with what is happening in our world. At the time of COVID-19, you remember that some of the modern countries, they were grabbing the masks of other countries, medicines of other countries. A modern country, a wealthy country, just compare this to the very simple society at the time of Prophet, a group of people who reside in Medina. They need themselves, they are in trouble, difficulty, but they divide their houses with the immigrants. This is something that religion teaches to the people. And about other examples as well. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter Nur, verse 32 says, وَأَنْكِحُ الْأَيَامَ مِنْكُمْ وَالصَّالِحِينَ مِنْ عِبَادِكُمْ وَإِمَائِكُمْ. Marry off those who are single among you. It is not enough that you have your own family, you married and you have your own family and that's finished. No. There are many people, many young people, they need someone to pave the way for them to marry. So marry off those who are single among you and the upright among your male slaves and your female slaves. It means do not be careless about their marital status. In another example, in chapter Mutaffifin, verse 1, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, when making a trade with the other believers, do not use short measures. Keep the just path. Woe to the defrauders who use short measures. وَيْلٌ لِلْمُطَفِّفِينَ. So these are very tiny manifestations, apparently tiny manifestations of social codes of Islamic lifestyle, altogether comprise a very beautiful image, very beautiful appearance for Islamic lifestyle to the world. And they are not something old. No, they are very exactly the issues that today, even in the modern world, we need them. And they are going to help us. These are all about the financial support that Muslims and believers should have toward each other. The second type of support that we have as believers, we have to show toward the other believers is spiritual support. Inshallah, we'll talk about that in the next episodes. Thank you. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.
Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever. Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. Oh God, please don't deprive me a blissful life eternally. One day all my deeds will be shown in front of you, and no one will be beside me. I'll be standing on my own. Blessing me with your mercy is all I'm hoping for. Oh Allah, make my wishes come true. Jannah, Jannah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This missile is going to be the third attempt by the Iranians, an attempt to send a satellite into an altitude that has already been experienced by Iran, an altitude above 400 kilometers. Iran's two previous launches failed. The U.S. president ridiculed the second failure with a very accurate satellite image on X, formerly known as Twitter. The picture Donald Trump released was received from the strongest American satellite. The accurate and real-time image shows the significance of military satellite in space at low altitudes. But there are only 9 countries in the world that are capable of launching military satellites. So, if the missile reaches the required altitude and places the satellite into orbit, the number of countries that are capable of launching military satellites will increase to 10. Will it happen? September 1975. This man, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the Iranian king, had asked for the purchase of U.S. weapons. But his requests were always undermined by then-Democratic U.S. President John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was assassinated, and his Secretary of State Nixon succeeded him as the next U.S. president. He showed a friendly face to the Iranian Shah. Nixon had good memories of the Shah. The Iranian king had sponsored Nixon's election campaign, so Nixon welcomed the idea to make the Iranian monarch more dependent on him. The Shah signed the first purchase contract with Nixon worth over $2 billion. At that time, it was the highest amount ever paid for the purchase of weapons. The Syrians trained the Iranian forces on the missiles. Tehrani Mogaddam and his entourage learned the subjects more than the Syrians had expected and returned to Iran. But Iran had yet to have a missile to be launched. The missile training should have been useful. From that point onwards, all of Iran's efforts were concentrated on purchasing missiles. A military delegation, headed by then IRGC Minister Mohsen Rafiq Dost, was sent to Libya. Iran asked for missiles. Muammar Gaddafi, the Libyan leader, who did not have friendly relations with Saddam back then, agreed to sell a limited number of missiles to Iran, on condition the Libyan forces would carry out all of the stages from preparation to the launch of the missiles and that the Iranians would only stand by and watch. Iran agreed. On March 12, 1985, Iran launched its first ballistic missiles towards Iraq. The Iranian team did its first reverse engineering on the Libyan ballistic missiles. Will they succeed in making the missiles? As the first long-range Iranian missile, Imad can be under complete control of the operators until the moment it strikes its target. The launchers of the Imad missile are made in a way to be used under any circumstances. One of the most important factors in controlling and guiding the missiles is a high variety of the launchers. It can be mobile and even moving for this missile. After making ballistic missiles, Iran decided to make cruise missiles as well. Cruise is a guided missile that does not move beyond the atmosphere of the Earth. It moves close to the surface of the Earth and can confront electronic warfare. Its path can be changed and guided until it strikes the target. A type of jet engine is used in most of cruise missiles, while other missiles use a rocket engine. The missiles usually move at a very low altitude all along in order not to be detected by the enemy's radar. It usually moves with a constant speed faster than sound or close to the speed of sound. Due to the inexpensive nature of the budget it requires for production compared to ballistic missiles, and due to the constituents required to propel the missile to move towards the target, cruise missiles have been on the radar of many powerful countries in the world for years. The first cruise missiles Iran made and started to apply changes to were silkworm missiles. But soon, Iran had access to more cruise missiles. The outcome of studying them was the Iranian Nur missile. The sea-launched Nur cruise missile is one of the various types of cruise missiles produced by Iran's defense industries. It joined the country's Navy Forces fleet in the 1990s. The Nur is anti-ship and produced in very large numbers. The success in producing sea-launched cruise missiles led Iran to produce land-to-land cruise missiles as well. SUMAR is one of the various types of cruise missiles made by Iran. The SUMAR is so important that the Uzi Rabin, the father of Israel's missile industry, said he takes off his hat in respect to its designers. SUMAR, the most precise Iranian cruise missile. Minimum range, 2,000 kilometers. Can be guided until the moment of strike. Low possibility for deviation. Completely Iranian guided system. Strike precision, 100%. After the SUMAR missile, the Hawaiian missile, one of the cruise missiles made by the Defense Ministry and Armed Forces Logistics, showed up. The range of the missile, 1,300 kilometers. The issue of possessing and making missiles is one thing. The courage to use them is a totally different matter. After the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, Iran launched a missile operation against a U.S. base in Iraq in a retaliatory move. The moments the missiles were launched served as an ethical lesson for the military personnel in the world. To understand the importance of the strike on Ain al-Assad in a method involving mercy by firing the missiles one by one so less people would be injured is, in a way, a contrast between the Islamic Republic's ideology and the U.S. supremacist ideology. Noam Chomsky, the famous U.S. theoretician, believes that the United States' hostilities and grudge against the Islamic Republic is due to the fact that the country seeks to protect its independence. He said the Islamic Republic of Iran is unacceptable for the U.S. because it will not give up its independence. The issue of striking Ain al-Assad in terms of shattering U.S. grandeur is so important that leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called it a day of God. The interesting point is the U.S. did not respond to the attack. Attacking Ain al-Assad indicates Iran's high missile power for the following reasons. Firstly, all U.S. defense and tracking systems were completely on standby. After Martyr Soleimani's assassination, the U.S. warships quickly left the region so they could not be targeted by Iranian ships. It means they did not feel that their bases in the region would be threatened. The military alertness in the bases was so high, they always had fighter jets and bombers ready for operation. Iran fired the missiles one by one. While it remarkably increased the chances for the enemy to torpedo them, Iran did not rain down missiles in order to evade a massive killing. Yet, at least 9 planes flew the wounded personnel to Jordan and several Chinook planes flew to Baghdad. It was the first official attack against U.S. positions after World War II. After staging the massive operation from the IRGC's Aerospace Center, resistance groups in other countries also stage attacks on U.S. military bases. Iran did something that even the Soviet Union had not dared to do. Iran shattered the United States' aura of invincibility at the highest level. On the second martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the U.S. General held a press conference and spoke about the IRGC's aerospace muscle flexing. They admitted that Iran targeted any point it wanted. February 19, 2020. The IRGC Commander-in-Chief, alongside IRGC's Aerospace Commander, unveiled new engines. They are known as Salman and Zuhir composite engines. Composites are not metal, they're made from the combination of materials that give you cutting-edge technology. The materials can boost Iran's missile power to the space above 400 kilometers, and they are very light. This is one of the uses of the engines. Its next use is defense power against the enemy satellites. It means Iran will be able to hunt satellites in space. Recently, India destroyed one of its old satellites with this type of missile. So, it means Iran will not suffice to hit enemy's drones. From now on, if necessary, it will hit military satellites as well. April 22, 2020, Semnan. The IRGC decides to fire Qasid satellite carrier. It's a two-stage missile that uses liquid and then solid fuel. The engine is of the Zohair and Salman types. It is entirely made in Iran. The Qasid is supposed to launch the newer missile to orbit at an altitude above 400 kilometers. If it happens, Iran will be the 10th country to possess this capability in the world. Only 50 years were needed for the Iranians to reach the edge of technology. 50 years ago, when the Iranian Shah was bewildered among the missile launches by other countries, he might have never thought the day would come when the Iranian youth will reach from the desert in Semnan to the orbit above 400 kilometers. Asadullah Alam, the Prime Minister of the government during Mohammad Reza Shah's tenure, described the youth as a bunch of lazy people. His Prime Minister, Razem Ara, also believed that illiterate people do not even have the potential to even make a pitcher. But today, the same youth have catapulted Iran to the club of owners of military satellites, and this is just the beginning. Iran has now become a powerful country in producing a horrifying weapon named Precision Strike Ballistic Missile. It means no other country in the world can force Iran by the threat of weapons to do what they want. Now, major powers know that they are very fragile in front of Iran's missile power, and they have to answer Iran for their military behaviors with respect. All the powers in the world know what is seen in military drills and on TV is just a fraction of the achievements that are displayed, and Iran's main missile power is by far scarier than what can be seen.
Thank you. Aquí Teherán, la voz de la República Islámica de Irán.
Estimados oyentes, ahora escucharán las aleyas 9 a 11 de la sura de Hud del Sagrado Corán, recitadas por el señor Vaghefi.
ولئن أذقنا الإنسان منا رحمة ثم نزعناها منه ولئن أذقناه نعماء بعد ضراء مسته ليقولن ذهب السيئات عني إنه لفرح فخور إلا الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات